For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable.
That's right.
For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you.
That's right.
For the record, lab on me going all the way.
All the way.
For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste.
Stop calling.
For the record. 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 For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable.
That's right.
The Clink Stories of Redemption. Here we go again. Another wonderful episode to season 7. I hope you've all enjoyed today. Every guest that we've had on, the feedback's been phenomenal. And how is this? We are 28,000 downloads away from our million. It is such an honor to be able to continue to do this week after week and bring you guys what we know is number one true crime podcast in Australia, Stories of Redemption. Today is no different. Another fantastic story from a young man, I will call him. He's younger than me. He's better looking. Oh, no, maybe, I don't know. I'm better looking than him and I'm older. But anyway, this man's from over the other side of Australia. He's trying to get into his professional boxing career, which we'll touch on. He's a talented young man. He's doing good things in the community. Unfortunately, he's had a bit of a kick in the guts of recent by the law, which we'll definitely get on to. His name is Matty Floyd. Matt, welcome to the Clink Stories of Redemption, mate.
Thank you, brother. Happy to be here.
What a story you have. You grew up in foster care. You're a survivor of both abuse and sexual abuse. You went through jail, drugs, and you've turned your life around to want to be an inspiration to others through your own lived experience and trying to provide a safe place, a bed and food for many young people. Mate, it's been an interesting walk for you, hasn't it? Your journey.
Yeah, it's been interesting.
Mate, let's go back to the younger years. Let's talk about what it was like growing up for Matty Floyd.
When it started. So my mum was she loved me. You know, I was definitely, she loved me like I wasn't supposed to be born. She was told she couldn't have babies at that time, and if she had me, she was gonna die. So I was always like a little miracle baby to her. But she just, it was real hard for her. She had a lot of mental issues herself, in and out of hospital. So she couldn't really do much, and when she did try and look after me, she would, she would go to the shops, for example, and get the trolley fulls of food and walk out. She wasn't a very good crook. She'd always get pinched. So because of the mental issues she had, instead of going to jail, she would usually go to mental hospitals for a while and things like that. So I would usually stay with other people, friends, my nana, family, and then sometimes into, foster care, and it was all over the place. I can't even remember how many different places I lived or stayed with. There was a lot. I always know that my mum loved me. I feel like I had the love from her. It was just a bit different. But dad was something happened to him when I was young. Apparently he did all right before I was maybe 3 or something, and then he lost his mind, and he was just he just was never really around. You know, usually he was in and out of mental hospitals like Greylands and Bentley and all that. From memory, I guess it was traumatic having to see all that, you know, like having to see him get locked up and all that sort of shit, and then same with my mum. But as a kid, I guess.
Absolutely. You're a young boy, mate. Like, it's,
I've never actually had really sat down and thought about it. I just remember, I never think about the trauma. Whenever I think about my childhood, I remember that, sort of more the people that looked after me. I remember this bloke, Max, he wanted to adopt me. He had me for a couple of years, and I remember him a lot because he did a lot of good for me. He was the first time I had stability, could go to school, could go to sport, things like that, got picked up on time. You know, sometimes I'd never get picked up from school. And then one day he couldn't look, you know, he had a new missus, yeah. And she didn't like me because I wasn't his son. So he left, he went to Adelaide, and you know, but I've never really sat down and thought about the trauma I had from my mum and that. It's more I think about the people that looked after me, the ones that didn't have to. Like, I saw Max for the first time since back then, last year, and I said to him, man, I'm not angry or upset at you. I'm real thankful for them good times you give me, because that's actually a lot of what I can remember, you know, them, you know, what you did.
Pretty powerful, isn't it, when somebody does come into your life like that and, you know, shows you, I guess, the love and the care that we all crave for, really. We all desire and need. Unfortunately, not all of us receive until somebody like that comes into your life. And I mean, I just trying to understand how hard it really must have been for you. And when we get into your story during this interview, I think this is relevant and will make a lot of sense to the listeners to why Matty Floyd went down the paths, you know what I mean, and became the man that you are, and why you are so passionate about what you're doing today. I think this has a lot of relevance to the path you've walked and where you've come from.
Yeah, you're probably right, actually. I remember I hustled from when I was about 10. I always wanted to make money. I always wanted to give it to my mum so she could look after me, probably so she didn't have to steal shit. And I always remember any cent I made, every money, anything I ever made, I hustled from when I was 10. And I made quite a lot of money when I was a kid. And I gave it all to her, just always in that hope that, you know, we could like live like a normal, you know, have a normal life, I guess. I remember when I made most of the money, that's when I was staying with that Bob dude. That was that foster family. I was staying with him for about 6 months, and I was working at the markets every Sunday. I was doing all the Pokemon cards back then, but back then when I was 10, like 20 years ago, people weren't buying like on eBay and things like that yet as much. So I was getting boxes of Pokemon cards from America back then.
That's right.
Yeah. So when I was 10 and I was getting them back then, if you bought stuff online, you're a year before everyone. So I was getting like Jungle and Fossil sets, which were like the set 6 months to a year before anyone in Perth. And how I did it at the markets was pretty funny, how I started going there. I went there by myself one day on a Sunday and I scoped the place out. When I was 10, I remember I went with my little backpack, my little fold-up table, and I scoped the place out, and I remember all the traffic at the Canning Vale markets, like it was packed, this place was full. You had to line up from 3 a.m. to get a bay, and I just planted my little table in the middle where all the food was, where all the traffic was, put my table there, and I lasted there a couple of weeks without anyone noticing. Yeah. And then when they carried on, they end up saying, hey, buddy, like you can't really just come in and just plant your table on the front, you know? They go, if you buy a table, because I was only a kid, they go, if you buy a table from us, it's $6. So it was $5 for the table, you get a dollar back, we'll let you stay. And then before you knew it, I had one table, two, three, four, I had a big shop at the front of the thing, you know? And then that's when I met Bob.
Wow.
So Bob was another like card dealer, but it wasn't, no one was like doing as well as I was. And Bob ended up, that's why he was a foster family. He took in kids, you know? And that's why he met me at the markets and he took me in. I ended up staying with him. And that was when I was about 10.
I just want to congratulate you, Matty, on that, because that right there gives you a good indication of the man that you've grown into, and why in our short talks prior to here, there's some few things that stuck in my mind about you giving back. And I, for one, understand that growing up on the streets and, you know, going in and out of foster homes and, you know, like it you did what you did to survive. You could have turned into, you know, a little street rat and gone around thieving, but you had a business mind from that age that allowed you to see things differently, I guess. How smart, you know what I mean? Like, you pick up on something that you know is going to be a big thing, and you know, young kids are going to... I mean, I remember my son's 23 and he had a collection of it. I used to be like, oh, fuck. What? Now, if only we'd had the cards in mint condition. I've been blessed. My dear friend Willem Powerfish, he is like an uncle to my kids, and, you know, he's gifted them with a couple of really, really good ones that are, you know, still in their proper sealed and their what do you call it, where they certify them or whatever, and they'll be worth a bit of money. What an awesome thing for you to start doing at such a young age.
I don't know why, man, because normally 10-year-olds destroy their cards, but when I was 10... I was grabbing them cards, putting them straight into silkies, I called them, straight into the folder, and I protected everything, never damaged anything. I think because I never had anything, if I did get something, I really looked after it anyway. So I don't know, like...
Appreciated it, yeah.
And then I did, I jerried on like to Game Boy Advance hadn't come to Australia yet, and then a year later, when I was 11, I built all my money, and then there was someone that I ended up taking from there. I ended up going to Thailand when I was 11 years old. Bought all these Game Boy Advance games, and I made 38 grand from all these Game Boy Advance games when I was 11.
So how did you get to Thailand without your parent? Without your parents' sort of signature, did you forge it or something?
No, I went with someone that I met at the markets, and I just said they were my uncle.
This is the mindset of you. You're already in that business head, you know what I mean? Like, now I start to get the gist of the gym and everything. Like, you're not silly, are you?
Oh, yeah, I was always, I was pretty onto it, man. But I've always, as a kid, I always felt guilty. I never kept anything. Like, if I got given like a game or a machine, I'd put it into the markets, my selling stuff. You know, I'd use it to build more so I could give, you know, I always had the idea of giving my mum millions of dollars so I could be normal, you know, have that normality, have a normal life, you know. But that 38 grand I made went straight to, you know, went straight to my family.
Matt, can I ask you, was there drugs involved around you at that age from your mum or anyone else in your presence? Was that something that, you know, you had to sort of experience?
Man, there was like fucking, my mum was just all prescription drugs. So she used to OD all the time I think back then it would have been like Valium and antidepressants. She was a manic depressant. And, had like, there was, man, at one stage there was like 10 people living in this one little house. Like you had like her brother and then my brother and then all their mates and shit like that. And they were all using drugs. So, they were all using drugs. My brother, and there was always, you had the usual, like, you know, your dealers coming around, boys on bikes coming around, shit happening, shit going down. I couldn't be at the house because my brother got into trouble or whatever. I remember once I had a mate over and I ended up staying with his family because our house got threatened. And I remember we had like 20, like all the power got cut off and we had 24 hours to leave us out, etc. And then luckily my mate came over that day because then I ended up having somewhere to stay after that. I went and stay with his family for the next probably few months or whatever.
Wow.
So, yeah, there was all that shit going on around, there.
You end up at what age being in a position where somebody starts to take advantage of you?
First time was when I was 10, when I was staying with that Bob. They were like a foster family. There was a few different kids there at different times. I was the oldest kid there by far, I think, like, the youngest kid under me was like 6 or 7. And they had their own 2-year-old daughter. I remember her. And then there was other foster kids there. But I don't even know if they were running it properly or what. I know a year and a half later, I left after about 6 months, but about a year and a half later, I remember they all got done. It was all over like the news and that for being like a pedophile family. I remember the mum was, she was only young. She was like 21. And I remember the guy, he was like a little dude with a beard, but he was a real scary looking dude back then, but real nice. He was about 55 probably, maybe 50 or 54. They all look older when you're younger, you know? I can't remember his, but yeah, he looked older. And I remember I liked him because he looked real scary, but he was so nice to me, you know?
Yeah.
So I remember saying, I met him at the markets and he was like, man, you're so smart. Come teach me. I remember he was always saying he had like a big collection in the attic and he had all this stuff in the attic and that. And if I stayed with him and helped him, like he wanted me to teach him how to buy. No one knew how I was getting all these cards online. He wanted me to teach him all my tricks or what I was doing. But he made out to me like he had like millions, like he was real rich and wealthy and he was going to help my family if I come stay with him. And I remember I stayed with him and I was showing him like the prices and all this and that and teaching him. And I ended up working for him. And he was dodgy, like, they were doing other shit as well. They weren't just, like, in the card game. They had, like, all this Disney stuff, and they always, like, had all these rorts going on. Back of the truck rorts.
Yeah, well, and I know that it makes your blood boil because, you know, we'll touch on something that happened a couple of years ago in reference to these type of predators. But, to find something like you said with stability and you know the things that you really wanted and needed, somebody that took an interest in what you were genuinely doing, you wouldn't really be thinking that they would be out to to harm you or sexually abuse you or in any way, shape or form, because obviously, you know, they're giving you all the things you want to know and feel in a support sort of environment. Would that be right?
Yeah, it was weird because you actually don't know what's going on. Like, you're real, like, it's weird, like you're so like confused and you think it's fucking, I can never get my head around it, man. Like, I still can't understand it. I've forgotten a few things, but obviously you remember a couple, you know, but fuck, I don't know. Yeah, it's a hard one.
And you know what, mate, I can see it in your eyes. It is still sensitive, and I don't want to push that any further than what you're comfortable to talk with, because that's not what it's about. And as me, somebody who is also a survivor, I get it. And it's never easy reliving. Let's take a step forward and moving on from that period. What was life like for you as a teenager? You know, that 13, 14.
Man, I loved being a teenager. I had a lot more freedom. I was still on, like, living in houses and on the street and sometimes even at the school. But I was free, man. I was real strong. Well, I thought I was real strong. I was a real weak, sensitive kid. Obviously, I was the oldest kid at that house, and I always feel guilt from being the oldest kid there, not doing anything. And then it happened. Yeah. I again, you know, a year later, I remember staying with this basketball coach, and I really felt weak when I was a teenager because I felt like, why the fuck does this keep happening? Even when I was 12, from a girl, but, you know, and I was like, fucking, obviously, when it happened from the girl, I was actually happy. And it was weird that I was happy, yeah. You know, like, fucking, even now when I tell the story, I'm like, man, I genuinely was fucking happy about it. Like, I can't, people are like, man, no, you must have been traumatized because of what happened earlier. I'm like, nah, I was genuinely fucking happy. I can't sit here and say it hurt me because I was actually fucking thankful. You know, it's weird. And then when I was a teenager,
yep.
13 and 14, I was fucking felt real, I just wasn't like, I went from like being this real scared kid to not being scared of anything. And would fight anyone at the school and anywhere. And I was popular, I think, you know, I had a lot of mates, I think probably because I kept getting into fights. And I was always the one that I'd find places, like where I was saying, like wherever it wasn't open, like houses, and I'd have parties. Then I was hustling, you know, like I was hustling, like I'd go to farm, like our little shopping center at our school, and I'd steal like, the six packs of the gum, like five lots of them, dack them, steal this, that. And I'll just all day, every day at school, selling them $30, $50 a day. I'll squeeze in. I'd get my best mate at the time. I end up, he was a footy superstar. He, you know, it was good having him on the side of the road because I was real embarrassed to go on the side of the road, but he would come with me. And he'd always let me keep fucking the money because he knew, you know, in the end, like he would do it all with me. So we'd be out there. We'd make like $150 squeezing on the side of the road next to the raffles. In like 2 hours or something, you know. Now whenever I see them squeegees on the side of the road, I always talk to them and I always give them $100 or something, you know, every single time, no matter what.
Yeah, I rate that. I totally agree, and I'm the same, you know, whatever I've got there, and it's definitely never your 5 cents and 10 cents, it's always a note of whatever I can afford at the time. And even to be honest with you, yeah. I don't even expect them to wash my window. It's just like, yeah, mate, you're out here doing it. I remember seeing, we just had a bloke up here who was very popular. I don't know the full story, but he passed away in a violent way, I believe. He was hit or attacked. Anyway, it was a big thing up here, maybe 2-3 months ago. But, you know, somebody knocked off this bloke's push bike and there was so much shit talk around it. You know, like, oh, why didn't he get a real job? Because the community was banding together to try and raise money to help him to buy another push bike, because this push bike was his way of getting to this particular spot for him to do the squidgy, you know, the windows. And I couldn't believe the shit that was coming out of fucking people's mouths, writing this bloke off, get a real job, you know, do this. I thought, you fucking weak pieces of shit. This guy's doing his best. He's out there having a crack. Most people would give him nothing, you know what I mean? Then there'd be people like yourself or myself or some other good people out there that see what the purpose is. He's a hard worker. He turned up every day. He was there 6-7 days a week, sun up to sun down. What more commitment can you give a job? You know what I mean? But yet people have this mindset that it wasn't a good enough job. He was a dole bludger. He's not paying taxes, and he's a piece of shit. Well, I find it really, really hard to swallow that one, mate. And, yeah, full credit to you for being out there and having a crack. And, you know, like, people need to just sit the fuck back and actually respect that.
Even when we're kids, man, no one would, like, want to stop and give us money ever. And we learned what you had to do. We learned who to target, you know. We called it slapping it on. So if we saw the right people, you just do it, slap it on, and they'd give you money to fuck off. So we learned the way. Like, no, I don't think I can remember. Like, you know, maybe you'd get one person in the day that would actually give money and stop and talk to you or whatever. Like, people just don't give a fuck. And we were kids, man. We were like 13, you know, like, and I can't remember very, you know, you'd be lucky to get one person in a day. So we learned the tricks of the trade, what to do. You just slapped it on. You got the cars at the front, you'd pick your right targets. And you just do their windows and they'll go, you know, they give you money to fuck off pretty much. But we learned.
Here you go again. I really do appreciate your intelligence because, once again, you're telling a story that is so business structured and your mindset at that age to be able to put that together, know that that's the plan for you to better your day and get ahead and make a couple extra dollars. Mate, that's smart. That's really, really smart. And credit to you for that. It wasn't all roses for you though, was it, mate? You know, like you said, you learned to get your hands up, keep your hands up at a very young age. Obviously, you carried, well, tell me if I'm wrong, but I would expect with what you lived with and went through would have been a lot of pain underneath that you were suppressing. And I mean, at that age, you're not going to release that because it would have been seen as a weakness to tell anybody, you know, or blocking it out.
I remember people give me shit. I remember it came out about the basketball coach and I denied it. People found out about it. And as a teenager, people were giving me shit about it. And I remember fucking really denying it and smashing on with anyone that would say it, you know. And, yeah, I remember it was real embarrassed and, like, I hated, you know, I just never, even, like, because I was so embarrassed about that, even if little things would be said about me, because I dealt with that, I was real sensitive. Like, if I heard people talking shit behind my whatever, I would go right on with it, even as a teenager, just because of I was so worried about other shit coming out, yeah. You know, from when I was a kid. I remember when that basketball coach rumor started. It was true, obviously, but I was flat out denied it, you know, and I started hating. Like, I never actually hated him, but I thought as a teenager that I hated like gay men, and I thought I hated, I was a real fucking, even though I wasn't homophobic, I pretended to be homophobic in front of all my mates, you know, but I wasn't. I never had a problem, but I felt, you know, my best mate, one of my best mates back then ended up being gay, and he couldn't come out to me because I always acted like I hated gays when I didn't, because I was just didn't know how to deal with it at all, you know, and I was fighting everyone and wanted to bash every pedophile and kill him, and I had all these plans, and, you know, even back then as a teenager, I had vigilante plans.
I think Matty, you know, this,
but no one probably knew why.
Exactly right, and that's why I wanted to go back, because, you know, we haven't even had that chat, but I really wanted to just, for the listener and you know, for your story to come out in the best possible way, to show what traumas you did go through, to why, you know what I mean, you went down the roads later in life, and you know, that acceptance of sort of coming into a bike club where you know, became a president at a very young age of a club. We don't need to go down the road of who, where, and how, and why, but that's the facts. You were, and you know, you're hustling as well, you know, like getting involved in this and that to make the money. I mean, what was it that pushed you to that point of then going from this hardworking young person with this vision and this pure heart? Because that's what I see in you, is a man with a really genuine heart that was just caring. I mean, for you to think that you want to go and do this to give, like you said, you know, you were doing it to give to your mum. You just wanted to see your mum okay. You know, you just wanted to feel just that normality, that stability and love. So, you know, at a young age, you're out there giving it your all. Where did it start to bend and you know, you start to go to that crossroad of crime as opposed to falling into, you know, a little bit more study and stuff like that?
I know when I started crime, I was actually, I wasn't great in school, but they kept me in school because I was really good at sport. I was a good athlete. I loved school, man, you know. with my mate Snap. But what happened was, the hustle would have, I would have been fine on the hustle, you know, where I was, and I was staying in a good place. I was staying with one of my best mates, and I always had somewhere to stay in high school. I had a lot of good families, and I reach out to them all the time now. Like, I get them, I look after them at my fights, and I talk to them, and I never forget. But I had a lot of good support from these different families, from friends when I was in high school. I started fighting started doing training to fight when I was about 16 and everything. That was for a different reason, but that was to protect my sister. But what happened was I ended up getting someone pregnant when I was 16, and I shit myself because there's no way in hell was I gonna let any of my kids go through what I went through, you know? I wanted to make sure that she had everything, you know, my daughter at the time. So I ended up leaving school. I started selling drugs. I was doing the wrong things back then. And I had a mate, and I was in good shape back then. And I had a mate who ran a strip club in time. So I was doing the drug thing and this and that probably for about 6 months or whatever. Probably when I was about 17, my mate come to me and he found out what I was doing. He was a bit older. He owned north of the river. He owned one of the biggest male strip people. And he goes, man, you're too good to be fucking doing that shit. Like, you're looking after your daughter. I've had my daughter full time since she was 2 months old, since she was a baby. And he goes, you're too good, man, to be fucking doing that shit. You know, you've got your daughter, you're a good, you know, blah, blah, blah. He got me stripping when I was 17. So I started stripping, which was killer money, bro. And I was just perfect for that, the hustle. You know, I was making fucking like $5,000 some weekends eventually.
You man whore. You big, big, bad man whore.
Yeah, I know, man. It was hectic. It was what I was good at, you know. And about 2 years later.
So, can you dance? Are you a dancer?
No, I was a shit dancer, man. I still am a shit dancer. People always say that, man. I was a terrible dancer. It's just choreography. It's just the routine. So, I remember the first trip I did. I didn't know what I was doing. I drove there. I had to look it online how to do it, and it was just a choreography. So it's five songs, and you just do like you play game, and it's just like a. You know, you can do the dancing ones where you got to dance and that, but when you do the strips at the houses or wherever, it's just like a choreography that you got to learn. And I was terrible.
Yep.
But I was young and I learned and I had the baby face, so that got me through, I think. And about 2 years later, I ended up learning everything and starting my own business. So I have my own strip business south of River Butt. So you got south and north river here, and I was there was none south of the river. And back then, you know, what, 12, 13 years ago. Now it's all freelance. But back then you had to book guys and girls through companies. And there was only a few companies. I was the only one south of the river.
Agencies.
Yeah. Now agencies are gone to shit because everyone's freelance now. But back then you had to book for an agency. And I was the only one south of the river. I worked out the market. I worked out what to do. And then in the end, I ended up having 100 people like in the next couple of weeks working for me and owning my own business. And I did that for a few years. And then, so I've always been a hustler. I've always been smart with money, and I can always justify it. And that's why the cops fucking hate me as well, you know?
Fuck, I tell you what. And that's I'm not being silly. That's a lot of money back then. I mean, I remember, you know, what we used to pay on the porn and prawn nights back in the club days, mate, for a female stripper to come out or a duo show or whatever it was. They made big money, you know, for a bloke to be swinging his toggle around.
And I was still working as well, man.
So, Matty, what then, you're doing so well. Why feel like you needed to, you know, step into that other world, that darker world? Why would you feel that was something that becomes so important to you? Because truly, I'm not pissing in your pocket. You've got a smart head. Once again, you've just explained another structure that you created into a business with a plan. You looked outside of the circle. You were doing something for someone and went, hang on, I can do this on my own and better. Like that right there, that's... Today you'd be classed as somebody that people would look up to for business advice. I mean,
like I've always said to everyone, I never got in trouble for fucking selling drugs like they're trying to accuse or doing anything like that shit. It's always been for injustice crimes. I was doing well even when I made money. I always invested smartly too. Invested in gold, invested in Bitcoin, you know, things like that. Another reason why the cops hate me, because every time they try and do whatever to me, I've got everything there. I can show them on my fucking phone and they're like, fuck, you know, it's all legitimate. They can't do anything. But I don't advertise that
Yeah.
In the past, I haven't advertised that back then to the world. So they're just like, how's this fucking cunt doing so well? And because I am who I am, I know where I come from.
Yeah.
And I still have, you know, them sort of mates because they are my mates. And I'm in the fight world as well. They just assume fucking the worst. What happened was I ended up, the first time I went to prison, about 8 of my mates were going to get in trouble, were all at my house. And instead of every cunt getting in trouble, I thought it was going to be a slap of the wrist. I fucking put my hand up for everything, everyone, you know. And I had to do a bit of time in the end, not thinking that that would happen. But it all came out that I was fucking putting my hand up. So I got done for perverting the course of justice, for fucking copping it for every cunt. And did the jail, you know, for everyone. And everyone knew that. That was my first lagging. And I never thought I'd get jail, but I did. And then, yeah.
It's one of those places, Matty, that you either go there once and learn from it and learn a tough lesson, or you come out smarter than what you went in and more connections. And, well, the rest is, the rest of your story, basically, isn't it, from here on in?
Yeah, well, I came out at 22 and I was mates with a few, and I was a bit pissed off at the world for having to do jail for fuck all and you know, just doing the righty. And because I was in jail for the reasons I went for and because I could fight, I was supposed to fight back then. I was doing MMA and kickboxing back then because I'd been doing that since I was 16. I wanted to fight professionally as a boxer because I was always best at boxing. And I was going to box, but then I had another, you know, I ended up having a brother that I love that come over from Queensland, and I helped him out. And that's when I did the whole, went down the bot, you know, the other path. Yeah,
the club scene.
Which got in the way of the box. The club thing, and then I ended up I had a lot of love for him and them and always will, you know, and respect everything from that. But I wanted to box and fight, so and they knew that, so I walked away respectfully so I could box and fight, because we all get what happens. But because I did do that and try to help them over here, the cobbers fucking hated me, and they already hated me anyway. And that's where the next thing happened. So I'm away from all the club stuff, but they've still got me down as a bike, even though I'm getting ready for my professional fighting. I ended up buying a big gym in Balcatta where, like, you know, Danny Green was training there, and Hyder, who's one of the best, the best trainer.
Yep, I know who you're talking about there, Mr. Angelo Hyder.
Yeah, so he was training me. He was at the gym. But what happened was there was 8 bedrooms at the back of this gym. And I bought this from a mutual friend with the idea of getting all the fighters, the adults that were, most of them had, you know, ice, drug addictions back then. And I was trying to get them off the ice and fighting again. So I put them all in this beautiful establishment in these bedrooms, hoping they'd get off it, fight. And then eventually, like, I was obviously covering everything for them. But eventually, when they started fighting and then the gym started running and that, then I was hoping it would all run itself. You know, that was always the idea, but it backfired because we ended up getting the coppers ended up putting a pedophile in the gym, you know. The coppers didn't. I let them stay there, but they planted the seed. It was still my decision, but yeah.
That must have been tough for you, Matt, knowing damn well your whole mindset around sexual predators, knowing what you had gone through, and for you to have someone brought into your environment, a safe place that you've created to help people, to then find this out, this must have really pissed you off.
Man, I still had a lot of guilt, man, from when I was a kid, you know. And because of the doing the club thing, the coppers had a real hard on for me, you know. And they pretty much put this bloke, man, this bloke had tattoos on his face saying "Stay True" on his eyebrows. Like, you just wouldn't have known, man, you know. Like, oh, if I could go back in time, the signs were there. But fucking, mate, he told me everything. I had boys around me saying, man, there's something off about this guy. But the problem with me is, and I was a lot younger then, you know, I would have been, what, 23 or 24 then. I fucking liked him, he made me laugh. And when I like someone, that's it, bro. I'll back that person to the end, you know.
Yep.
Unless there's proper proof. And that's what happened. So there was proper proof that he was a critter in the end. He was hanging out with me one day, and my mate that's staying at one of the boys at the gym goes, "Matty, are you with Boz right now?" And I said, "Yeah, I'm with him." And he goes, "Fucking get rid of him, come straight to the gym now." I was like, "Okay, no problem." Went straight to the gym. And he goes, man, look at this. Lots of paperwork. So he had him being on the sex offender register. So it showed you. So that way it was done on purpose so I could see his crime. So it went through everything he'd done with the 12-year-old girl and how he's on the register for the next 20 years, etc. And then another one with his charges of it. So I'm reading this thinking, fuck, this can't be fucking true. I'm like, how did you get this? Like, because I had cameras there. I was like, how did you get this? He goes, mate, we've checked the cameras. The cameras were off. We don't know. Like, we had no idea how these papers got here. And me being the hothead and I didn't believe it, I rang him straight away, going on about this paperwork, going off my head. And he goes, don't fucking, said something like, don't call me a fucking, like, shit. Remember, you left me by yourself with your daughter. My daughter was 8 at the time. And then he hanged up the phone on me. And then, yeah. And then I just remember for the next 4 weeks, I was supposed to get ready for a fight back then. For the next 4 weeks, I just fucking stopped training, stopped eating, didn't sleep, was just fucking, yeah, it was bad. I wanted to grab this guy.
Was it more the fact too, Matty, that you're now talking about your own daughter, your everything, your world, that you're there to protect, love and care for, and yet you all of a sudden now, the seed has been planted. There's obviously a question of vulnerability. Is he doing something to my daughter, or has he done something to my daughter? How could you not have these thoughts in your head?
And he was taunting me, man, like taunting me for weeks, like fucking ringing me going, just saying shit, you know, like just giving me shit, like catch me if you can and fucking, you know, like this is on you, like fucking, he was really taunting me, man. Like it was weird. Like he knew I was going to fuck, like it was weird. Like this cunt, like he feels protected, you know, and he was protected. He's protected by the police, which is a fact. It's not just a accusation or a conspiracy. It all came out. He was protected by the police. He was a registered police informant, David Boswell, and he was protected. And it's a, you know, it's a known thing. It came out in court. So I was looking for him, and then I finally found out where he was. And he was at this house. Stephen Rose, he's passed away since. But I went straight to the house. As soon as he was there, I remember Stephen Rose came to the door with a samurai sword. And he goes, Matty, what's, you know, I go, you know what I'm fucking here for? Get out of the way, man, and let's just, you know. And I was going to kick the door open, but he just let me in. And he's just gone, all right, but fucking you deal with him. You don't touch anyone in the house. There was like all these fucking junkies and people walking around the house. Anyway, I've gone straight into the guy's bedroom. He was like half asleep on the bed. He went to grab, he had a gun like next to him on the table, and I fucking run, grabbed it, chucked it away, and I've grabbed him. And then I said to him, you know, I had him on the bed looking at him, and I looked him in the eyes and I said, what the fuck did you mean about my fucking daughter, cocksucker? Like, what, you know, like what did you mean with that? And I looked him in the eyes and he goes, man, he looked me in the eyes and I could just see it in his eyes. He goes, I swear, man, I never touched her. I swear I never touched her, because he knew I was going to kill him. And he goes, the coppers, they made me fucking say it. They told me to fucking taunt you. They told me to say it to you. And I knew, I looked at him and I knew he was telling the truth, you know? And I was like, I was satisfied. Like, I didn't feel sick anymore. You know, I felt better. Like, I was angry at this person. Like, I still hate the pedophile. You know, I hate the crimes he's done. But I was so satisfied that it wasn't my daughter. Which sounds bad because other kids, you know, have been hurt by this man. But I still...
No, but I get it. I get it. I think, and all our listeners...
Wasn't going to let it go.
No, and I truly believe that all our listeners would understand that, you know, like, mate, that's a big knot in your gut to carry around when you're thinking about your own child, you know, could have been the one that was molested. That's by someone you're close to. That's fucked.
And I asked him, you know, like, you know, obviously the 12-year-old girl was true. That was all real. He admitted to that. He admitted to other things. So he's sitting on the bed in front of me and I'm by the door. And every time he tried to leave, he tried to get away, you know, I'd hit him and I'd put him back on the bed and get answers. And he admitted to other offences. You know, he admitted to his own little sister. He admitted to a couple other offences and obviously the 12-year-old girl. And he tried to blame that, you know, like his dad made him do things to his sister, etc., and all this shit. Anyway, for about half an hour, and I was just satisfied in the end. I got the answers. I obviously told him what I thought of him. I'd left the situation. And in the end, I ended up getting grabbed by all the coppers. Like, they grabbed me like it was fucking, like I'd, you know, like assassinated some fucking president or something, man. Like, it was full on how they grabbed me. And so what happened was the whole house was being recorded. So there was this program called Blue Iris. So it wasn't just grabbing me, because when they gave me the evidence, they got like a few days of evidence. So people were going in there fucking buying shit or whatever, and that was all like live footage. So the police were watching me live. So it was like live footage at a police station. So this house was connected with the police or whatever. Yep. He ended up being a police informant. He was working for the police for however the fuck long. He was grabbing other people, and I don't know what evidence he's given other people or what, but when he came across me, I ended up becoming the target.
Yep.
And he did this crime on this 12-year-old girl probably like a year or 2 years before I even met him. And he ended up getting, from memory, because he cooperated against me. So because I bashed him for something he did before I even knew him, he got about 10, 11 months jail for having sex with a 12-year-old three times or something like that. And he got 10, 11 months jail in another state. So he got to do another state because apparently he was in so fear for his life, et cetera, et cetera. And he got real protected, looked after. And he got a big payout because of all the psychological damage I did to him. So he got a big payout because he claimed all that, right? He was sending my family. He ended up like starting some business with this payout, like some art business or something. And he ended up, every time he gets checks like of money, he sends it while I was in jail. He sends it to fucking people I know, my family. He says, tell your son or tell Maddie thanks for this fucking check. You know what I mean? Shit like that. He was even taunting me after when I was in jail.
Did he go to the boneyard?
He got 10, 11 months from me. How's that? He gets 10, 11 months for doing a crime, so for giving evidence on me, for bashing him for a crime that he did before I even knew him. And I got, you know how long? So I ended up getting 5.5 years because I detained him for half an hour. So I got 3.5 years for not letting him leave the room. And it was only an OBH. Like, I didn't even go savage on him. Like, I fucking hit him every time he tried to leave. Like, I didn't break anything. Like, he wasn't that bad at all. It was an OBH, which, you know,
actual bodily harm.
Occasionally bodily harm, whatever it's called, is like the lesser. Yeah, so like the bottom, so the lesser of the ones. Like, it's, you can slap someone and get an OBH.
That's right. No, if it's grievous, you've broken the skin.
Which is the worst one.
Yeah, grievous bodily harm, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. So I had OBH, which was fuck all, and he gets 10 months for pedophilia. I get 5.5 years for bashing him for pedophilia he did before I even fucking knew him. That's WA, man. That's the law.
They're a protected species, Matty, and it doesn't matter, mate. You know, it'll always be that way. They get 6 months, they get 3 months, we get years for fucking, you know, what I don't understand is... They take the innocence from people. They destroy people's lives completely and wholly. They leave them with traumatic fucking mindsets that lead people to, you know, heavy drug addiction, suicide. They're fucking scum. Yet they freely get backed and supported by the law. And you know yourself, if you come across a pedophile in the system and you're in there and he gets flogged, you get an automatic fucking 12 months straight off the bat or 6 months off the bat. For the assault in jail. Like, it's bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. It must have been...
And they get payouts when that happens.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It must have been hard for you, bro, coming back out and to society after those years and knowing that, you know, credit to you for standing up for what you did and in your beliefs. And I think that any man... If you didn't do that, then you're piss weak if you know damn well that that person is factually a pedophile and you do nothing about it, then you're just as bad. Take that for what it's worth. But, you know, you've come out, obviously missed out on years of your daughter's life at that stage, you know. It's a hard road. How was it coming back into society?
The last lagging was good for me. I definitely didn't need to do that long. Like, I was all right after probably about a year, but it started dragging after that. It was good for me. I jail and Perth's pretty good, man. It's pretty easy, you know. Like, I was captain of the footy team. I ran the gym there. You get looked after in there. Like, it's pretty good, man. Like, it's not that bad. It's being away from everyone. That's obviously the problem, you know. Obviously, while I'm in there, as I'm about to get released, I start putting together what I want to do, which was, you know, I wanted to build this gym. I wanted to fight professionally. I wanted to get kids. I started thinking, like, I'm not going to fucking do the adults again because that backfired, you know. Like, a lot of them boys that I was trying to help get off the ice and fight, they were just fucking selling my gym equipment and shit like that. So this time I was like, I'm going to get teenagers like myself, man. I'm going to really focus on the teens. If an adult comes to me and they're legitimate and they really fucking show me that they are legitimate, I'll help them. You know, I won't say no to them, but it's mainly the teenagers and the kids like myself that I look for. So I wanted a gym that was going to help these kids get off the street and give them stability while I fought professionally. Like that was, you know, I already put enough money into the right things, coins and this and that. I was all right to do what I wanted to do when I got out, which is what I've done. Yeah. So when I got out, I built Pinky's gym, and it's a wicked facility, man.
Pinky's. Can I ask you why Pinky's? That sounds like a strip joint. Not a boxing gym.
That's what some of my mates said, man, when they come there, eh? Like they go, it looks like a fucking strip joint. So what happened was my last name's Floyd. So Pink Floyd. And about probably 10 years ago, I was sparring and all the boys were there and I was wearing pink wraps and someone just started calling me Pinky because of my last name, like Pink Floyd. And the pink wrap. So I've had growing up, everyone called me Floydy. And then now it's like Maddie. And in the boxing world, everyone sort of called me Pinky back then. So when I had to think of a name, I just said Pinky's on the spot. Every time I come up with a name, I sort of do it on the spot. I sort of wing everything.
Yeah, that's cool. And you know what? It gives you your own identity.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just a name, man. It's just a name. And even like, even people always ask me, like, it's everything's just made up numbers, you know, made up names. And even at the gym, people are like, how much is it, you know? And I just make up a number, you know. I always say to people, man, look, if you're not working, if you can't afford it, fucking, it's free, man. Everything's free. Everything I do is free. I only make up a number. You know, people don't take the piss that way. So the people that are working, they usually pay. Like, people know what I'm doing at the gym, you know. I've had people say, hey, man, I've lost my job. You know, I want to freeze my membership or whatever. And I'm like, don't be fucking silly. Keep training. But this is the first time where I haven't really been ripped off, where it's actually running all right. You know, I'm not, you know, making millions of dollars, but I'm fucking, it's running itself, which is what I sort of wanted from the start. And we're helping out heaps of kids, man, heaps of adults, man. There's people that come out of psych hospitals. There's women's refuge that come there from Fremantle. Like, there's women's refuge of about 15, 20 girls that come there, you know.
You should be very, very, very proud of yourself.
Thanks, man. Yeah.
I think, Matt, that, you know, giving so much back, and you are, you truly are. There's no bullshit there, you know. Like you said, you know, you once again, go back to the start of our story. And, you know, this is why it's so important. I'll say it again for people to hear where it all began. Because what it does is it shows the man that you are today and the heart that you have always had. It's not like you just bung this on to make a business, make $1 million, which, you know, if you do make $1 million out of a gym, well, fucking hey to you, mate. You know, you've done well, but it doesn't happen like that.
No.
You know, so you've got to give. You've got to give. You've got to be compassionate. You've got to help people, you know, like you said. If someone was taking the piss out of you, well, yeah, I'd be pissed off too. But to the average Joe Blow that comes up and says, mate, I'm embarrassed, but I've lost my job, or I'm struggling, you know, the missus left me, or, you know, whatever it might be, a woman going through a DV situation, you know, you're opening that door a safe place and still not turning people away. That right there shows you, you know, you've got a genuinely good heart.
Well, man, we end up, I end up letting people like live there. And I mean, I have like, before I went to jail for this thing a few months ago, I had 5 kids living with me at my house, you know, 5 teenagers, like sometimes an adult man, you know, like it's, there's no place for them to go, man. These teenagers, there's nowhere for them to go in Fremantle. It's not one place, man. I've been fighting and fighting with this dude in Fremantle to try and build this place. Even if they just put fucking mattresses on the floor just so they can go there, you know. With my gym, they know they can always come there. They know they can always go. They know I'll pick them up or I'll get someone to pick them up. But there's nothing. You got all these people that will applaud me and say what you're doing as well and say they want to do this and that, but no one ever does nothing. I've been offered money from campaigns and charities and that, but I won't take a cent because I know that when I was a kid, if I found out this some dude was doing this for fucking money, I probably wouldn't trust him anymore, especially with what happened to me as a kid. You always know that there's ulterior motives. Like, I've been doing this shit since I can remember, but I don't ever talk about it until now because I never did all them things so I could talk about it, you know, like here or talk about it on the table with people. I just fucking did it. Like, you know, I don't do it. So, you know, and
yeah, it's a genuine passion. This is what I'm saying. This is you as a human, you know, you as a man with compassion, a man that's got a heart who could be so angry and bitter at the world and still be in jail and still bashing fucking people. But you're not. You're out there trying to give people an opportunity to see a better way, you know, and I think that's – and this is what the Clink's about, you know, having people like yourself come on here and inspire. It's inspiring to hear your story. Somebody will take something from this out there, and I know that our listeners are constantly, you know, letting us know, thank you, you know, out of so-and-so's story, I was able to, you know, realize this or do that or believe in myself. You're a walking example of that.
Yeah, cheers, man.
Where are you today with your boxing? Because I know that there's a bit of controversy at the moment around.
Oh, man, they're bad, these commissions are real bad, because I used to be, you know, like used to be good mates with a few of them. I know half of them. It's fucking wrong what's happening. I'm undefeated. I was doing well. This year, I was hoping to fight on the Kansas Junior card, on the Barry Hall card. I'm obviously good mates with Angelo and Barry and that. And then they literally fucking did all this to me just before that was going to happen. I was going to fight for a regional title, which would have put me, I think, top 30 or 40 in the world. So this year was my year. Next year was going to be my real year, but this year was going to get me there, you know. And they fucking got me a beauty, these cunts. So, so a few months ago, fucking, it's just ridiculous, really. Like, I got accused. I was in Queensland getting ready for my next fight, because I always go to Queensland to Angelo's gym and train there before each of my fights. Usually, or I try to go there before each of my fights. And I was there getting ready, as usual. And then fucking, literally, like, the coppers have fucking even said, like, there's no evidence against me. I'm literally getting accused of shit just because fucking someone wants to get fucking a reduced sentence or whatever the fuck is going on. Just on hearsay, man. Like, it's literally, like, I said to the fucking my lawyers, I'm like, this is fucking wrong, man. So you're telling me I can just say all this shit belongs to fucking Joe Bloggs and that cunt gets charged? They go, well, yeah. I'm like, that's fucking insane, man. How the fuck does this happen? Yep. So I'm in Queensland getting ready for my fight.
This is how it happens, bro, and it's up to you to defend yourself. That ain't give a fuck.
I was in Queensland getting ready, and then they started kicking in shit over here. And my lawyer got in contact with them. I got in contact with them. I'm like, listen, fucking, if there's a fucking issue, I'll come back now. If there's a warrant for my arrest, what the fuck are you kicking in doors for? I'll come back. Like, this is ridiculous. They said, nah, no issue. We just want to talk to you. I go, well, fucking, my lawyer will be with me. I'll come in, you know? And they go, yeah, come back on the 8th of May. I go, if you're going to hassle my fucking family, I'll come back now. So don't fucking lie. And I want this in fucking to my lawyer as well. And they said the same thing to my lawyer. My lawyer said, all good. I'm at fucking Movie World with my kids on the Thursday. On the Friday, I've still got my Apple iPhone, the same phone that I'd communicated, talked to my lawyer. So obviously, fucking, I'm not an idiot. I know they know where the fuck I am. It's an Apple fucking iPhone. And on the Friday, I just finished training. I'm walking around Surfers Paradise with my kids and that. And fucking, they fucking grab me and say, listen, mate, you're getting extradited. We're going to have any problems with you. We know you're a bit of a fighter. And I said, nah, it's all good. This is fucking dumb. You know, I said, speak to my fucking lawyer. This is fucking pathetic. They go, look, mate, it's got nothing to do with us. It's Perth, you know, you're getting extradited. And I was like, these cunts are fucking putrid. Like, they waited for my family to come over to fucking grab me and fuck me over. I was like, whatever. Right, it was putrid over there. I'm in the Queensland watch house. They were even saying, yeah, they did this on purpose on a Friday so the coppers could come over here for the weekend. He even said, well, we're having beers.
Because you got no court. Mate,
they did it on purpose. They do this all the fucking time on purpose so they get a free trip. They knew they were getting a free trip. They go, mate, you won't be going anywhere. And the watch house was fucking putrid and Surfers Paradise, man. They don't let you make fucking phone calls. The food's fucking whatever the fuck that is. And they don't let you fucking shower. And when they do, the shower doesn't work anyway. You got to press this big ass fucking button that doesn't fucking work. It was fucking, and they're fucking putrid cunts over there, bro. They're all coppers. Yep. Like over here, they're just like normal people, like security officers. Over there, they're fucking cops, bro. Anyway, then the next thing you know, they're all laughing. I'm on the plane with the fucking cops, and they're all fucking just dogs, bro, like laughing about it. They like, did you like that flight risk thing? I'm like, what are you on about? They show me fucking, they go, you're on the news, mate. I go, what do you mean? And then the next thing I hear, you know, I'm on the news. Apparently trying to flee the fucking country. I was never trying to flee the country. I don't know, that's just bullshit. They reckon in a dramatic fucking takedown at gunpoint, there was no fucking guns. There was no dramatic fucking takedown. And they said I'm a fucking drug kingpin. I've never been in trouble for drugs in my life. Then they have to bring up the ex-bikey thing. The ex-bikey thing's, what, 10 years old. They don't bring up any of the good I've done, like the fucking 100 kids I've taken off the street, the kids that are fighting and working now because of me and homes because of me. They don't bring up all the stuff, all my fighting, you know, where I've come from, you know, my you know, all the community, you know, all the money that I make and win in the fights that I donate to charities and shit like that, you know, not so I can talk about it. I just fucking do it, man, you know. And these cunts are just fucking bam-mouthed me on the media for shit that's not even fucking true. All lies, man. None of that even happened.
I'm going through the same shit, Matty. I get it. I hear you, brother. I'm living it. I'm fucking, mate, every day of my life at the moment is exactly what you've just said. It's fucked. So you're on bail now, Matty.
Yeah, but it can't be for long, man. The charges are ridiculous. Like it has to be thrown out soon. I'm just waiting for them to throw it out. I'm doing a defamation case as well.
Well, look, I think, yeah, and I think too, you know, for your safety in reference to them using anything in a podcast, which they will, the moment they see that you're on the clink and I'm interviewing, yeah, we will maybe knock that part of the story on the head now, because I want to make sure that you're safe and you do get that chance to defend yourself with what you've got ahead. I think you've got to just stay being this man that you know you are. You know, don't allow them to break down the man you've grown into, because you're a man with morals. You're a man with a heart. You're doing good things. You know what? It's like me. I get cunts talk shit about me left, right, and fucking center. Brother, a man's never done a fucking day's jail over me in my life. You know, around 46 years of age, I've fucking helped more people than I can poke a stick at. I've been kicked in the guts and fucking left in the gutter more times than I can fucking say. You know what I mean? But would I be doing that to people? Fuck no. I'll pick them up, put shoes on their feet, give them a dollar, give them a fee, whatever I've got. Because that's what I believe is a good human, and that's how life should be.
Yeah.
You know, you want to not stand over and stand on top of people, but you want to fucking pick people up and have them walk beside you. You know, and that's what you're doing. And I really feel that that's a big positive and a great part of your redemption story. And I just want to say, mate, don't give up. Don't let them beat you, you know. Just keep doing what you're doing, because it's not about you. What you're doing is helping others, because there's not enough of you out there.
Yeah, I was. You do get down, man. Like a couple of weeks ago, I was like, fuck, man, I'll just get rid of this fucking gym and stop, you know. But you don't, you know, you feel like that for 5 minutes and you remember you got people like you, you know, and saying things like that to me, you know, like I think even H, who's Angelo, he said to me a couple of weeks ago, don't fucking get rid of the gym, buddy. Like you fucking, you know, look at all the good you've done and remind you. And then you have some kid, like I had some kid message me before saying, hey, Benny, can I come in and train, you know? And he's a kid that's been real, real good, you know. And so you get these things that come up and it reminds you and it makes you all right again. But you do, when you're in these situations, you do doubt for like, you know, a few minutes. But then it's the good that you have done in the past comes back, you know. Like I literally got a random message just before this podcast, which made me feel better, you know, because I've been feeling a bit shit myself today, you know.
Matty, what I want to ask you, mate, and we are coming to the end of this because it is the Clink Stories of Redemption. And we try to put it all into an hour for everybody to have a good listen. I ask all my guests at the end if there's a verse, a paragraph, a line, whatever it might be that's inspiring, that's kept you going through life and kept you visually looking ahead to better things.
A good quote that I've been using a lot lately came from Stoles. A good man doesn't talk about what a good man is. And I know that, you know, because that really humbles me when I think about that. I got it from a Stoic. I think Marcus Aurelius or someone like that said it. I've been reading a lot about, like, Stoics and things like that lately. They live like beggars, you know. They're real wise. They believe that wisdom.
I truly think that you are an inspiring man. I do. I'm I'm stoked that we did this. I'm stoked that I got to sit down and have this chat with you because, you know, there's always more to a person, no matter what you see in the media, no matter what their path, you know, like, all right, yeah, you're the president of a bike club, you've been involved with this, knocked around with that and that. But there's so much more to Matthew Floyd, you know, and I feel really honoured that you've been able to share some of that today because I think that it'll definitely connect with a lot of people. And to anybody out there that is struggling, guys, reach out and make sure that you find someone that you can talk to. If you're in Perth, find Matt's gym.
Absolutely, man. I'll take anyone in. They know that. The gym's in O'Connor, which is near Frio. But if they're not in Frio, like I can get them, or we can work out how they can get there. It's in O'Connor on Hines Road, on 32-34 Hines Road, which is just off South Street. People can find me on Instagram. I think my number's on the internet if they look up Pinky's Gym or whatever.
Yep.
They can reach out to me. They'll be able to, they can, you know, no matter what, there'll be someone there at the gym. The gym's 24 hours. And I don't sleep much, so I answer my phone most of the time.
Matty Floyd, thank you very, very much, mate, for being here. Thank you for taking the time to do the things that you do in the community. I wish you nothing but the best. And please keep in touch with us. I'd love to hear how things do pan out for you. Mate, you're welcome back on here anytime.
Yeah, man, thank you. I appreciate you having me.
For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable. That's right. For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you. That's right. For the record, lab on me going all the way. All the way. For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste. Stop calling. For the record, 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 for the record.